Just a little note here. Denise Farron was supposed to be the initial speaker, and she was unable to attend, so I've got appointed to do her presentation for her. So I will answer any questions I can on the information, and anything I can't, I'll take back and get your information and respond to you that way. So today we're going to describe Washington's Immunization Registry and Health Promotion System Child Profile. Specifically, we'll discuss how the health promotion component works, how it increases data quality in the system as a whole, and serves as an early warning mechanism for potential data quality problems. Washington has immunization registry is unique in the fact that it has two primary functions. We have the immunization registry side, which is the central repository for all the providers' vaccine and demographic information. And then we have the health promotion module, which is a centralized parent reminder system of immunizations, well child visits, and other parenting information. This is an example of the colorful and engaging graphics from our mailings, and this graphic shows how birth data comes in and that the same database contains the immunization and the mailing data. Birth certificate loading has happened since 1998. That means most children in Washington age 11 and under have a record, demographic, and often a Hep B in our system. This is a major source of demographic information, and other sources of data are from health plans, providers, and they can initiate the mailings from a child born outside of Washington with direct entry or submission. Health promotion module. Provides educational mailings from birth to 6 years of age. There are a total of 17 age-specific mailings, both in English and Spanish, with over 45 individual materials. Every mailing includes a statewide toll-free line for parents to update their child's demographic data, get information and referral, or opt out of the immunization registry. Callers can also opt out of just the mailings or of the system as a whole. So we are, everybody gets in and they have to call to opt out, obviously. Health promotions are best based on best practice professional guidance and input from parents, rooted in health education theory, including comprehensive evaluation, written at a sixth grade reading level to increase accessibility, and they are updated annually to stay current. So materials dissemination. Our goal is to reach 90% of the target audience with mailings, and we are currently at 86%, which reaches about 443,820 parents of children. That was a total of 1.4 million mailings last year. Of the 443,000 people, 28,000 received Spanish mailings. A variety of mechanisms are in place to identify the families who prefer Spanish versions, including the ability of batch providers and manual registry users to set language preference. Mail is sent every 3 months, according to up to age 18 months, and then every 6 months between ages 2 and 6 years old. Mailings for 27,000 records are sent each week for children under the age of 6. So weekly updates include 2,200 plus birth records and updates from vital statistics. We got 5 to 30 notifications of child deaths from vital statistics to block mails from being sent inappropriately. 200 plus electronic United States Postal Service address correction address updates. And 50 notifications from the post office of undeliverable addresses. The updates from vital statistics on adoptions also help avoid inappropriate mailings to birth mothers and flags to not mail to children for other reasons, such as extremely low birth weight. Electronic data returns from the address correction service update the record with a new address and flag our system to resend the mailings to the new address. This is a sample of the United States Postal update in our system. The majority of address corrections received each week are automatically loaded and updated to the appropriate record. The ACS updates come with a parent name, but we are able to match to the child in question based on the key line or mailing code. a small number of the ACS updates where the key line gets mangled must be individually reviewed to locate the correct record and manually update. Multiple data quality checks are performed weekly to ensure mailing accuracy and appropriateness. Each report checks all records under age 6 with a Washington address and not listed as deceased. Each generates between 5 and 30 records to manually check and update if possible before mailing occurs. If not possible, record is flagged and to not send the mailing to be reviewed, and then promote reserve address reports defaults to most recent valid address. So there's 3 on this slide, and there are 4 on this slide. So they have 7 queries that they do weekly to make sure that we do appropriate mailings. This is an example of the data quality report screen that we have in our system. So you can set it, you can update, let's see, where's my notes? All the reports can be run with data parameters specific to the last update stamp, and some have additional parameters that can be set. So, manual duplication for all records under age 6 are cleared out each week before mailing lists are generated. Mail history includes addresses sent to, mailing history includes mailing, language, address sent to, et cetera, and some of our reports rely on this tracking method. It also helps when confirming if someone is already receiving the mailings, checking language sent or other issues. Mail export can be customized to select mailings by mailing age, zip code or county, language, or for a prior date. So an example, or a system benefit example, is that we received a batch with bad dates of birth. The vaccine administered were mistakenly submitted for the birth dates. So the record came in, and instead of their birth date being August 4th, 1970, it was December 1st, 2007. Mailings were generated based on the incorrect date of birth, and adults called asking why they had received our mailings for children under age 6. The health promotion and registry staff investigated the issue to find a specific batch provider had sent the error. Health promotion staff then were able to identify problematic records and immediately block them from being mailed. The provider corrected the file and resent the accurate date of birth. From that experience, a new data quality report was developed to catch future senders of bad dates of birth based on a vaccine administered. An immunization registry without a health promotion module may have a harder time identifying this specific error as quickly as we were because of the timeliness of our mailings. And that's specific to each age group. So conclusions. Some of the registry benefits from having the health promotion module activity. We have regular updates from vital statistics, post office, and more. We have ongoing data quality reviews and corrections made for mailing purposes weekly. Providers, it provides an early warning system to identify data problems when they are easier, when they are easier to fix, and mechanisms for parents to update demographic information. Health promotion module benefits from being part of an immunization registry because they have access to an extensive registry database, 5.7 million patients with approximately 44 million vaccines as of February of this year. Regular data updates from providers, plans, especially for addresses. Language preference from data sources, sophisticated deduplication processes, and system users correcting and reporting errors. Address loss is the biggest reason children drop off of our mailing list, and registry data is a steady stream of possible new addresses to try for a person we've lost the ability to mail to. And that was my presentation, and that's the information, contact information for me.
Thanks, Julie. If you were paying close attention, you'd observe that she emphasized the need for collaboration, planning, system design in order for this process to work. We've heard some wonderful presentations, and I suspect you have questions. There's a mic please step up to the mic and we'll try and take as many questions as we can. Please state your name, let's know where you're from, and that might help.
Hi, Emily Peterson. I'm from the Minnesota Immunization Information Connection. My question is for Nicole. No, it's a good question, no worries. Because we too just did a big data dump of Medicaid data, and we're having them go back to tell us, you know, why are the dates off? Were you able to go back to them, or were they able to verify that it was, you know, a claims date versus actual immunization date?
Are you talking about the providers or Medicaid?
Medicaid.
No, Medicaid's really not been that involved with us on the cleanup. But we did have a meeting with them recently, and that's why we were able to figure out that, hey, it's actually the way they bill. It's kind of complicated, and I can't describe it the best. But if a provider is billing at an encounter level, they get paid on that one for all the services. Everything's sent to us that way.
And so they're sending us everything underneath. Well, that one individual vaccine might have been denied, but it's already sent to us. So what they've told us we need to do is talk to their developer and actually get it paid on the individual vaccine level after it's been denied or not. So that's part of that problem. And again, we just realized it now. It's learning after the fact always. But does that answer it?
Yeah, and your plan to then just automatically delete the Medicaid shots if there's an existing clinical or more trustworthy shot.
Right.
That's been working out well so far.
Yeah, if it's within 10 days. We just kind of say if it's the same antigen group, same within that 10-day window, we go ahead and delete it because we've got something matching to that. If it's questionable, because also with the Medicaid is they might have billed a Pediarix but actually gave the individual vaccines. So you have to worry about that as well, and we're working on that. Because once we dumped it, we had so many calls from providers saying, you know, I've got this data, but this is what the pink card says, or the immunization record, so that's why we did all this work. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for two really good presentations. I actually have a quick question for each person. My first question is for Jody. How you doing, Jody?
Good, thank you.
I love it. About being able to get automatic updates of addresses from the post office. That's fabulous. My concern is that sometimes we have a guarantor as a parent and we don't have the birth mother. And you can't, in my eyes, make the assumption that if you found one parent, you found where the kid is. Have you dealt with that, or do you have some principles that you work on? How do you know if an address change is just that mom and dad split up or that whatever?
My honest answer is, I don't really know, since I'm not one that does the report, works with address change. When we send the list of patients to the post office, they do get assigned a key line that is attached to the record in question. So long as the key lines are matching up, that's just the information we're going to take back. We do also have a system where we have a list of bad addresses that keeps us from mailing to previously known bad addresses. And so if the address change is coming in for a previously known bad address, we won't send to that one. If they're mangled, the process, we have several different search criteria where we can go in and try to find the patient, but eventually if we can't locate them, then they just won't get that mailing for that time frame. But I can have my compadre that didn't come tonight respond to you, but for a more better answer.
And Nicole, again, great presentation. I'm in awe of places that can accept HL7 messages because our registry is not quite there. One of the things that concerns me is that the way we get information right now, I have that moment before data goes in to make sure that the data is okay. And my understanding is with HL7, we kind of give that up. So my question is, do we really have to do that? Or is there some way that you could have some sort of a filter on the information that's coming in an HL7 message to not load a shot that was a match within a series that's within a 10-day window, so that you don't have to do that cleanup all the time? Is that possible?
I think we've discussed that in our office. We're just concerned of what if this provider's not on the registry and they actually got that vaccine within the 10-day because the kid didn't come to the provider with that record, the providers giving that vaccine. So we don't want to prohibit if it was actually administered. Right now, our stance is to kind of let it come in, then we'll correct it as needed. But I think definitely down the road, we'll look at it a little bit closer. As for the rest of that kind of, with HL7, it's somewhat scary at first, but when you kind of work with it so closely, you understand some of the common things happening, so you know to advise those providers, okay, you need to do it this way, you need to start coding this way, you need to start using this field this way, and that's kind of what we've done. Is luckily, I mean, we have two different vendors, and we've really been intimate on how those systems work. It's going to be a lot scarier when we work with private vendors because there's numerous amounts of them. But right now, because it's our pilot, we've really understood those systems and how they work. One is an update automatic, so the user doesn't have that ability to send when they want. The other one's totally opposite, where they push a button and send it. So knowing the difference in those interfaces also helps you understand the way the data is going to come in and what they can control and not. So it's overwhelming at first, but once you get past that, it's pretty nice.
Hi, I'm Kelly Moore with the Tennessee Immunization Program. Enjoyed both of your presentations and had a question again for each of you sort of on the nuts and bolts as Tennessee works to improve its immunization information system. For each of you, question about budget and personnel. How many resources does it take to do what you're talking about doing? Tennessee's really tiny, and with the hiring freeze and other issues, you know, we will probably stay that way. But I was interested in getting a sense of how many resources does it take to do what you're doing? Also, the health promotion materials, is that something that was developed within the immunization program there in Washington, or did you partner with another group to provide you those materials that then you used to distribute for the child program? Thank you.
Okay. So budget, I'm not 100% sure on what it costs to do this, but I do know that they have, is Laura considered part of them too? So. There's the manager, and then we have an outreach person to go out and do the Spanish gathering and information out to the Spanish communities. We have two folks that work on the reports themselves and the data downloads from vital statistics and the address corrections. And then there are two other staff that work on the health promotion materials and development that we originally had, and those were developed, I believe, with parent input and other agency-related input with the immunization program to make sure that the wording and the message that we were getting out was appropriate. So it was a multi-agency, multi-level process to develop the materials, and those groups are all involved with the annual updates to the system. So I think that helps. And then we have one IT guy also to help those folks with any problems that they have with their downloads.
As for Kansas, we're also pretty small. We started off with very limited resources, and we were just able to add additional this last year. I think we have a total of staff of 5, and I get right in there working with them. It's actually the presentation that you see is really the work of myself and Mike McPherson that added a lot of this. As far as the technical expertise, we've actually had to learn it ourselves. So we took our vendor as well, Envision Technology Partners too, that helped us understand how the data comes in and what we need to look at, and then how we could write scripts to alleviate some of these problems and the long-term effect. So yeah, we're pretty limited. Our resources are very limited. We're also on a hiring freeze, but we've never had one distinct person on data quality. So that's why we really worked on, okay, we need to come up with a process procedure. So now this year we're actually able to come up with money, and next year, or hopefully this year, we'll be able to actually get someone to work on that full hand.
This question is for Kansas. I'm really excited about the HL7 interface that you're doing and the pilots that you're currently conducting. Could you talk a little bit about the search criteria that you're doing from the EMR to your registry, and what protocol are you using in order to determine if that's an exact match or a potential match?
Sure. I'll tell you a little bit about it. What I know, and again, my HL7 people are down there, and you can come to the presentation tomorrow. It really explains a lot. Right now, the search criteria is if someone sends us a query, we go off last name, first name, date of birth, have to be exact. If social is provided, we go on that, it has to be exact. Or we don't kick back a match. And there's other secondary levels that we look at. If we don't have a match, we go into another like Syntex type of query or matching. And if you want specifics, I can give you Ray Segelke. He's our vendor, and Mike McPherson as well. Does that help? Okay.
Yeah. This question is for Jody. I'm just wondering, with your, when you get the address fixes from the post office and you correct those in your system, do you have a process for handling your electronic imports from EMR systems so that it doesn't revert back, the demographic update doesn't change the address back?
We do have a set of, I'm not quite sure, address rules, who we get them from. We also have a built-in history into the system, like I said, previously known bad addresses. So if the provider has not updated the address for the past 6 months, it's not going to update. They just go straight to the vaccine section. So we know that address that came in from them may be a previously known bad address. We also have a report that's going to currently look at the most recent valid address and promote that to be the mailing address that we work off of. So we're really working hard at trying to find out which ones were the bad, mark those as such, and then keep any valid addresses prominent and at the focus. So.
Hello, my name is Elise Lauren. I work with the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and we deal a lot with duplicates in our program. So I understand your pain with that. My question, as you were going through the presentation, it came to mind that every day we get calls of people that have had misadministrations, and we document that in VAERS. And I don't have any numbers with me, but you're welcome to look at the data that we have collected, and you can see not only in your state, but nationwide, how frequent that is. And that, especially when you were talking about the criteria you use in terms of the 10 days to see whether you override the information, that came to my mind because I don't know, they're still studying and CDC is still gathering information, but every day I hear about that. So that's probably something you have to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I'd be definitely interested in seeing those numbers. We did a quick query on our system to see kind of where the rise and fall of those duplicates come within that 10-day window, and that's where it kind of plateaued, so that's why we chose 10. It's hard. We allow those to come through. If we do find it was a misadministration, there's actually a way to mark them as invalid, that it was actually an invalid dose, so it doesn't look at those. It doesn't check for those again.
Hello, my name is Amy Osborne. I'm with the Georgia Registry of Immunizations. And I've got a question for Nicole. I'm sure that every organization that you have within your registry is wanting to go live. I mean, that's the thing. But what is your criteria for you allow them to do that? I mean, do they have, is there a certain time frame that they have to be duplicate free or?
Yeah. That may never happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, are you talking HL7 or direct entry?
HL7.
Okay. Usually what we have, and again, I'll refer you to the presentation tomorrow, we have actually a process, a implementation process that we go through where we extract the data from their system first. We run it through some scripts of non-standard data elements, and we give it back to them, say they have to clean. We give them time. Then they contact us when they're ready. And when they're ready, we have a training site as well as a production. So we load their data through that HL7 to training. That's when we do our second check of saying, okay, how many of those patients actually match against a record already in the system? And again, if they're against vital, we give them a list saying, hey, you need to change this date of birth, the social, whatever it is, before they come through to production. And same with vaccine, is if we identify all those vaccines coming from their system first, they have to clean it up. We just allow them to come back to us when they're done. We try to push them, but it's really up to them to do that cleanup. And if they need help, we have now other resources with a partnering organization to work through that. But really, it's kind of a sit and wait kind of thing. It's like, here's what you got to do. Okay, wait. So, I mean, we can push them as much as we want, but it's really, do they want it bad enough?
Well, we have organizations that will actually load and they'll get back a response file with tons and tons of errors. They call and say, can we go live when y'all do? And it's, you know, what can you create the errors from your last...
Yeah, right. And you kind of have to evaluate the errors. If it's, you know, their administration site visit or site thing keeps giving errors, that doesn't load in our system. It just gives them an error. So it's up to them at that point. But if it's, you know, social, the name, there's high priority ones that have to be clean. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much, ladies. You did a wonderful job. And thanks for giving us.